We starting?
Get the music ready, puppet. It's the bracket racket.
Okay, here we go. Our old school porn.
All right, silence. The show's gone. Come on, guys. Come on.
Okay, starting in 3, 2.
Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is our Hoops HD report. Coming to you a day earlier than normal. We're recording this here on Sunday evening, December 15th. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by John Stalica, David Griggs, and John Tytel. And this is the podcast we're going to talk about everything that's been going on in college basketball. And there has been a lot going on, maybe not during the week last week when it was a pretty late week, but over this weekend was a pretty busy and pretty crazy weekend up to about 5 minutes ago before we started the show even.
I mean, we're into that period. Well, you get there right away, but it, you know, where you have 12 and 13 hour Saturdays and just big, good games all day long and then a pretty good day today as well. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the show. The games were fun, and that makes for a fun show. So let's get started.
Let's get started, and we're going to start things off, and I think it's probably the best place to start off given what we just saw happen tonight before we started the show. We're going to start things off today in the Big Ten, a conference that has played 13 games so far, and the home teams are 13 conference games so far in this early December conference play, and home teams are 13-0. With today, Nebraska with a home win over Purdue.
Big.
Who have been ranked, you know, just barely outside the top 25. And then Minnesota just finished off a home win over Ohio State tonight.
Big. Like, look at the margins of victory. It's not that the home teams have won all the games. That in and of itself is remarkable. Look at the margins of victory from crappy Nebraska just blasting tournament good Purdue.
Yeah, and this is, you know, what Minnesota just did to Ohio State. Sleek, let me start off with you. You being our Ohio guy there. Ohio State was supposed to be the number one team in the nation, or at least an argument today between them and Kansas. That argument's gone, obviously, now. Kansas should be number one tomorrow. But Ohio State just got didn't show up today.
I don't know that the argument is gone, given the parity in the game this year, but that's certainly not the way to make a good impression on the voters. But that being said, that's the only bad game Ohio State has played this year. Elsewhere, they've just been obliterating teams left and right, whether it's Penn State or North Carolina is a few examples.
Yeah, if you look at some of these other games, though, a huge week. I got to say here, one of the biggest weeks I've ever seen for my alma mater, Rutgers, starting off with a home win over Wisconsin. And then you follow that up yesterday, and I know that Sandro was out for the entire game, and I know Miles Powell got injured early in the game and was out most of the second half with a concussion, but Rutgers was up 14-0 before you could blink against Seton Hall yesterday and just absolutely pounded them. David, it was one of the most impressive games I've ever seen from Rutgers.
Well, I mean, Chad, had Seton Hall been at full strength, it would not have looked like this. I think it would have been more like 68-54.
You're right. I'll give you that, David. I'll give you that. No, they just they were hitting threes, which they haven't done all season. And then on top of that, Nigel Johnson stayed out of foul trouble, so he was in there whenever they needed him. And the team is deep. The team is real deep.
Yes, a little bit on Rutgers. I don't know if they're tournament good or not, but they're certainly at a level of good that they haven't been at. That I can even recall, maybe like since the early 2000s, maybe it's been that long.
I'd say about the early 90s, not the early 2000s.
Yeah, but and I know that they have not won away from home yet, but this is a good Seton Hall team. It's a tested Seton Hall team that while not at full strength, this was a rivalry game where it felt like Rutgers was up 20-20 at the tip.
They were up 14-0. Start the game.
And I hate to say anything that makes you feel good, but kind of enjoy your moment, because not only was it a signature win over a ranked team, it was against a rival. So how good does this one feel? I mean, to a Rutgers fan base that doesn't really have a whole lot of moments like this.
This was the biggest crowd they've had in there in over 10 years, you know, through in there. They had Greg Shadow come out at halftime, pumping up the crowd. It was a great, great day to be a Rutgers Scarlet Knight fan. We can't say that very often. Let me bring you into the show here a little bit also. And I think there's a different team though in this conference you wanted to discuss, right?
I think I want to give a little love to the Nittany Lions. So usually the only Penn team I care about is mine, but 9-2 after a brutal stretch of 6 games against Power 5 teams, Mississippi, Syracuse, Wake, the Buckeyes, Maryland, and Alabama. You talk about a lot of teams not scheduling tough teams. This is one of the toughest schedule you'll see. They also blew a 21-point second-half lead against the Rebels in Brooklyn. Otherwise, they'd be 10-1 with their only loss at a previously undefeated Ohio State team. They got a 15-point win at Georgetown on the resume as well. They have a couple cupcakes coming up and the Philly special game against Iowa at college basketball's most historic gymnasium, the Palestra in Philly, because half of the Penn State roster hails from the city of brotherly love.
Yeah, you got Penn State there. David, I think we'd be remiss if we don't speak a little Michigan hoops as well, that they, after what they did, the battle for Atlantis, and we were calling them the best team in the nation, then they lose the game at Illinois, and then they suffer the heartbreak in overtime against Oregon over the weekend.
Three losses since then. Now, I mean, two of those, you know, one at Louisville, one at Illinois, you know, a place where no Big Ten teams can seem to win on the road, and then another against Oregon. In and of themselves, none of those losses are really bad, but when you go from looking like a top five team, and they did, holy crap, to losing all three of those kind of put together, I mean, I do think it is a bit of a setback. The Oregon game was good. Oregon, they were up, they were down double digits in the second half and fought to get it into overtime and had a chance to win at the end of the overtime. So it was a good effort. I don't think it's discouraging as much as it is frustrating for a team that I thought was a top five team. I don't think they are anymore. They might be top 15. They're still really good, but not one seed good. I've got one of the best bracketologists on the planet sitting here in Tytel. Is that accurate? Or, like, is the three losses probably take them out of contention of the one line?
I mean, I think another – sorry, go ahead.
Don't ask, please.
Yeah, I was going to say, one of the weird things that happened this week is there actually was one team that did win on the road, albeit non-conference play, and that's the Iowa Hawkeyes, who end up winning in Hilton Coliseum for the first time since 2001. There were a couple of occasions where it looked like Iowa State was going to make their – inevitable run, but this time the Hawkeyes kept shutting the door in the second half, and at 8-3, could the Hawkeyes be legit as well?
Yeah, but let me go back to Tytel. You want to answer David's question before we talk more Iowa hoops?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say that three losses will take anyone off the one seed line if it's before Christmas, which it is now. That's the whole reason I haven't put out a bracket yet. I usually wait till January because everything's in flux. Had you told me, if you look at the right-hand column here, that Maryland and Michigan again and Ohio State would be on the right side of these numbers, I wouldn't have believed it, but they are.
Yeah. And a couple other teams, Illinois, a bit of a home court hero, Iowa, who Stalica mentioned, getting a really impressive win over, you know, their hated rivals. This isn't the only conference that's like this, but we're seeing – teams that we didn't think would be as good as they are, Rutgers, maybe Penn State, maybe Illinois, at least in my case, and even Iowa, playing really well. And then others like, you know, many Wisconsin and Michigan State even not playing as well, a little bit upside down this league.
Now, this little stretch here we've had where the home teams are 13-0 out of the 14 games. There's one Big Ten game left here in December. It's coming up Wednesday night. It's Michigan State, who's probably – at least at the end of the season, was the best team in the conference. Northwestern, who may have been the worst team in the conference. So maybe I'd be absolutely shocked if they get to 14-0, but who knows? I mean, what we saw today, you just don't know. And a few other games to note here coming up this week. We've got Ohio State and Kentucky out in Las Vegas. I believe that's part of the CBS Sports Classic.
Yeah.
We've got Illinois and Missouri in the bragging rights game. We've got Indiana, Notre Dame, Purdue, Butler as part of the Crossroads Classic. Thank you. Also, mini Oklahoma State. A lot of big games coming up, especially next week. Maryland at Seton Hall in the middle of the week too, David. But a lot of good games.
Yeah, Maryland and Seton Hall. Is there a sense of urgency for both those teams in that game?
For a 10-1 Maryland team. Go ahead. Explain to me a sense of urgency for a 10-1 Maryland team, David.
Well, okay, because they just haven't beaten a team as good as Seton Hall yet. I mean, they're 10-1, but I mean they haven't really left it any really heavy weight yet.
But this is going to be an undermanned Seton Hall team. Sandra is still out. We don't know, given that it was concussion for Miles Powell, if he's even going to be playing. So,
yeah,
I can't agree with you that there's maybe a sense of urgency for Seton Hall, but not for by any means for Maryland. I don't think.
Yeah, well, not making the tournament sense of urgency, but staying in the top 10. Anyway, moving on.
Let's move on and talk about the team that is about to become the number one team in the nation. I'm talking about the Kansas Jayhawks. They were number two in one poll, number three in the other. Obviously, now they should be moving up to number one, in part because of what happened last week with Texas Tech knocking off Louisville. I guess we should go back and discuss that a little bit to begin with. David, you want to hit on them?
Yeah, real impressive showing up in Madison Square Garden from a Texas Tech team that had, you know, started off with high expectations and then struggled. And I think everybody was questioning them. We were questioning them. And then to go out and play the kind of defense they did and play as well as they did. And every time Louisville, like, appeared to be getting the momentum going, they would either come up with a big stop or come up with a big play of their own. It was just a phenomenally coached game, a phenomenally played game. And it just makes you wonder, like, look at how much Texas Tech has improved already from the beginning of the year to now.
They did this without their best player. So
right, yeah, and that makes it even more amazing.
Then you also got Baylor with the huge win over Butler, but Tytel, Texas seems to keep trying to lose games, but yet they pulled out another one. They were down to Central Michigan, found a way to win it, going away late. But what about this Texas team?
I mean, they're doing pretty well. So if they're trying to lose, they're only 9-1. So I think they have to try a little harder. The only neutral site loss to Georgetown, they blew a 7-point halftime lead. They could have been undefeated. Young team, starting five is only sophomores and juniors. And my favorite story of the year, one of, is our good friend Andrew Jones. This kid has dealt with leukemia and injuries. All he does this year is come back healthy, instant offense off the bench. Three games, there you see him, 15-plus points off the bench. Not a coincidence, I don't think, that his worst shooting game of the year was 2-for-11 in the team's only loss. My favorite stat about Andrew, his last time that he lost back-to-back games was in November, but that was back in 2017. It was to Duke and Gonzaga back-to-back in overtime by single digits at the PK80.
Yeah, I remember those.
Stalika, we've got a couple other teams here. I mentioned Baylor already. Also, you've got West Virginia sitting here with only one loss. We're starting to see a lot of good records at the top of this league, aren't we?
Yeah, West Virginia finally had a couple of bye games at home where they could pad the record, but the team that really impressed me was actually Oklahoma State earlier today. They did have their first rough patch of the season where they lost at home to Georgetown and then to Wichita State, but then they go on the road against a Houston team. They got out to a double-digit lead around halftime, and Houston did manage to tie the game in the second half, but the Cowboys never panicked and were able to get a significant road win here.
You can see the one drawback, I guess, from the Big 12 has been what they've been doing in their Big East Big 12 Challenge Series games here. They're actually trailing 4-2, and they were down 4-0 in this series. The series is still going on. There's going to be a total of 10 games in the series, but we're just kind of keeping track of that so far. They've won the last two most recent games, I believe.
Yeah. You mentioned this briefly, Chad, but that Baylor. Well, we'll talk more about that when we get to the Big East. That Baylor-Butler game was fun to watch. At least the second half was.
Let's talk quickly about what's coming up this week. We see Oklahoma's at Creighton and more big games coming up this week, including Kansas at Villanova. Real big test here. We could see another number one team lose a game this weekend. With a road.
I don't know.
It's a road test. It's a road test. Tytel, you've got some Philly ties. You think Jay Wright's team can knock off Kansas?
They can, but I think I'll pick the Jayhawks. I want to see what John thinks about Xavier at TCU.
I don't know if John wants to discuss Xavier tonight.
Well, we'll get into later on. There's going to be a little more desperation because they had their
own. Let's go right there. Go ahead, John. Let's go to the Big East to talk some Xavier hoops. Go for it.
Should we call it a waking? Should we call it a clusing? This was a team that ended up falling behind by as many as 13 points in the second half, but this was not one of Xavier's better defensive efforts. And even though they actually shot decently towards the final 10 minutes of the game, they played with their food too much and ended up taking a bad loss on the road at Wake Forest.
Yeah, let me ask you this. Xavier 9-2, I mean, that's certainly respectable. at least on the surface. But when you look at some of the games that they've struggled to win, struggling against Missouri State, who VCU, by the way, is having no trouble with, needing overtime to get past a bad Missouri team and looking bad in that game, this loss to Wake in particular, Xavier, it just doesn't seem like – and this is a team that thundered down the stretch last year, was playing really like a top 25 caliber team in the last few weeks of the season and had so much back. You know, I think despite being 9-2, I'd still say that they've been disappointing.
Well, they've also been playing walking the tightrope throughout the year, because keep in mind, they probably could have lost to both Missouri and Missouri State back-to-back, but still managed to scrape out wins in those games. And let's not forget the game against UConn down in Charleston, where I think about half their lineup fouled out by the second overtime, but still managed to claw out a win there.
Yeah, I just don't see anything impressive. And talk about the, you know, team that really needs a win. This win, this game at TCU coming up this weekend is maybe a must win for them, because that's, that could be another, I mean, that's the one team you should be able to beat in the Big 12 to begin with. Yeah. And it's you know, you can't win that game. You could have problems. There's going to be problems here at Xavier. But David, you want to talk a little bit about Butler here, who did pick up their first loss of the season, that in that really good game against,
second half
against Baylor.
Yeah, on the road against a highly ranked Baylor team, and Baylor's ranked in the range where you know, you're losing one game or less at home, or maybe probably no more than two or three. And they were behind for most of the game, but they fought and kept themselves in it. I was more impressed with how high I think Butler showed their ceiling to be, to go on the road against a team ranked that high, fall behind, have all the momentum going against them, and still play their way into a situation to where they almost stole one. Like, they almost got out of there with a win. They didn't get the win. I mean, gee whiz, if had they gotten that one, are we talking about Butler as a protected seed? But this is a really good Butler team. I think that they've looked as good or better than anyone else in the conference. You mentioned Villanova earlier. While, again, a very respectable 8-2, Butler's resume is more impressive. DePaul's resume is more impressive. I mean, those are the two teams that have really come out and lifted some heavy weight so far.
Yeah, Villanova struggled mightily with Delaware on Saturday. But, Tytel, I want to ask you about two different teams here, because I think you were at the Georgetown-Syracuse game, first of all. A Georgetown team that keeps winning games and keeps losing players. and then there's another team I think you want to discuss after that.
So we'll start with the Hoyas. They have three losses, but they've lost four players off their roster in the past few weeks. So never good when your ratio is that good. The strength of schedule is amazing. In the past, we've joked about Patrick Ewing's teams and how they have had cupcakes all around. But when you have a schedule that includes teams like Penn State, go at Oklahoma State, at SMU, host Syracuse, play Texas and Duke and New York City, it's a very impressive schedule. So I'm glad that the rankings are aware of that. And the fact that they welcomed Syracuse and a ton of Orange fans to Capital One Arena yesterday and were able to pull out a double-digit win despite the depleted roster was very impressive. As far as St. John's, you see they're last of the 10 teams here in terms of KenPom, but they're high in the rankings because they're 9-2 with a new coach, Mike Anderson. They had a 2-point home loss to Vermont, which probably said more frankly about Vermont than the Johnnies, but they almost came back from 10 points down with 6 minutes left to win that game, falling just short, and they have a neutral site loss to ASU. They've been getting very lucky with their own scheduling. 8 wins against teams outside the top 200, the anti-Georgetown, if you will. No true road games until January, and they're getting lucky. Their opponents shooting under 60% from the free throw line. So assuming that comes back to the norm, that's eventually going to bite them in the butt. Schedule gets much harder. They fly across the country on Saturday to face Arizona in San Francisco. Then they fly back to the East Coast, and they have 18 conference games, each of them against top 75 opponents. The good news is they're not going to have a lot of freshmen hitting the wall. One of the few teams in the whole country, they start at least one freshman, one sophomore, one junior, one senior.
There you see the rest of the upcoming schedule for this week as well in the Big East. Creighton with a home game against Oklahoma here on Tuesday night as well coming up. DePaul hosting Northwestern. David, you had a tweet about DePaul today. You want to throw that stat at us?
Yes. A very fun fact. DePaul, 2-0 against Big Ten teams on the road. That is two more road wins than everybody else in the Big Ten has in the Big Ten. Yeah. I mean, just remarkable what DePaul's doing. You know, first place in the Big Ten right now.
I just want to throw a quick note out here. You see this column here is the net rankings. We actually should be receiving the net rankings, I believe, tomorrow, Monday.
Yep. So it should be out as of tomorrow afternoon.
As of our next show here, actually, as of Under the Radar coming up later this week, we should have net rankings on the screens here. And I believe that the KPI is going to be coming out around the same time as well. Normally does. So we should have the rest of the screen filled in where all those ones are, all those ties are going to be going away. Let's jump over. Let's do a little ACC hoops here because we saw a hell of a game today.
Two of them.
We saw a lot of good games today. Well, let's start with the upset. Wofford at North Carolina. This is not last year's Wofford team.
No, it's not. It's about a mid-level SoCon team.
This by any means not last year's Wofford team. This is not a Wofford team that we were expecting to compete in what we think is going to be a very good Southern Conference. And they go to North Carolina, you know, the top 10 team in the nation, at least they were preseason. And they win. Now, I know it's an undermanned North Carolina team, but Salika, they still should not be able to win at North Carolina.
Well, the thing is, Wofford has actually won two games in a row at North Carolina. And Cole Anthony, we don't know when he's coming back for North Carolina. So this is what the Tar Heel team is going to be looking like for the foreseeable future. So now Tar Heel fans are probably thinking, is this what we're going to be? An NIT team, an NCAA bubble team? Wouldn't be the first time that they've actually missed the tournament under Roy Williams, but things cannot be good in Tar Heel land right now.
Well, I think once they get healthy, I don't think they're going to be missing the tournament, but.
Right. And the other thing about that is, I mean, while it is discouraging and you're like, well, they don't have any good wins, when are they going to beat anybody? They're always just 1 week away from turning their entire profile around, changing the entire complexion of it because of every week they're playing a tournament caliber team.
Let me talk about one other team. I'm actually going to pull the screen down here for a second and pull something else up. And Titel, the other game involving a SoCon team and an ACC team today was NC State on the road at UNC Greensboro.
How did it end up, Chad?
Well, we've got to try to figure out how it ended up here. If we should see this on the screen right now. Let's watch. This is a tie game now with 2.1 seconds left, and we should be able to see what happened.
Before you play that, Chad, I mean, like – You may recall UNC Greensboro, they only have two losses. One of them was against that Montana State team. They had that game won, but it was this crazy half-court, beyond half-court heave that Montana State hit to beat them. What happened today?
Let's see. And there you have it. Once again, UNC Greensboro goes down to a half-court heave, Titel.
I think their coach needs to start working on that full-court press because they're getting killed by those 50-footers. Titel Johnson guard pushing the Wolfpack 8-2 on the season with that amazing buzzer beater earlier today. Only two losses on the season. Opening night, 1-point overtime at Georgia Tech without Johnson, who made that shot, and a 5-point neutral site loss to a good Memphis team. So, undefeated was in play for the Wolfpack. Very nice veteran team with plenty of juniors and seniors throughout. They should be able to handle upstart young teams who will eventually hit the wall. Very difficult trip on Thursday to an undefeated Auburn team, which should be, I hope, a fantastic game. Then they start January 5. Winnable conference games is the good news. The bad news is the schedule is backloaded, so they better get as many wins as they can early before the Dukes and the Virginias and the Carolinas start appearing on their schedule.
Yeah, and I would like to, like, add to that a little bit. This NC State team, this was a nice win today. And to the casual fan, I don't think they're going to be that excited because UNC Greensboro just doesn't register on their radar. They didn't have a win at all last year that was anywhere close to this good. Like, they beat some good teams, but they beat them at home. And the good teams they beat, all of them pretty much had losing records on the road. So, like, to go and beat what is for a really good UNC Greensboro team on the road was a really nice win for this NC State team today.
Well, it's going to be a real interesting week, I think, ahead here in the ACC. First of all, North Carolina, off of that loss, now has to go cross country, has a game at Gonzaga Wednesday night. Then they head to Vegas to play play UCLA as part of that doubleheader with the Ohio State-Kentucky game out there. And now you also have Wofford. They get to travel how far from North Carolina to Duke to play that game, David? How far is that trip?
Oh, it's 8 miles. The two schools are eight miles apart.
So a very short trip for Wofford down to Duke on Thursday. We also mentioned the NC State-Auburn game, so a lot of interesting games here on the schedule ahead this week.
Yeah.
Stalica, I guess here's the other question I got to ask in the ACC, though. Louisville did suffer the loss, but everyone else in the top five seems to have suffered a loss as well. How far do you think Louisville's going to fall in the polls come Monday morning?
I still think they're going to slip a little bit, even though this was on a neutral court. Texas Tech, because that was probably their first win of significance this year after they had a couple toe stubs down in Las Vegas and then the heartbreaking overtime loss at DePaul. But Louisville, I don't think they'll fall far, but don't count on them staying at number one to be certain.
No, I don't think they stay at one, because if Kansas had lost it, there would have been an argument for them, but I think Kansas should be number one.
Yeah. Kansas, I know we already talked. They had that game against Duke where they turned it over seemingly once a minute, and they still barely lost. They haven't lost since then. Regardless of whether they would have ended up number one or not, I still think they are the best team, because the only game they lost was against another really good team, and they had a bad game.
Well, let's turn over to the SEC now. Tytel, we know we've got Auburn, who we talked about a little bit already, but what about Kentucky sitting here? You know, we thought they'd be really good. They did beat Georgia Tech, but this is another game against a not that good Georgia Tech team at home that they struggled in, didn't they?
They did. They're a young team, although not as young as the traditional Calipari teams, as I'll explain. 8-1 is 8-1, so I give them credit for winning games against Power 5 teams, even if Georgia Tech is not the most powerful. Their only loss was a historic upset by Evansville by 3 points, so they're that close to being undefeated. Amazingly, I never thought of Calipari as having a great free throw shooting team. Top 10 in the nation, 80% from the line. Also, no true road games until January, so even if you consider them a home court hero, as I'm sure David does, they're still winning those games. And they're doing it without senior big man Nate Sestina. He fractured his left wrist during practice a couple weeks ago. He's still out. So Calipari's been juggling the lineup. The good news is he's got the most non-freshman he's ever had, it seems like, in his rotation, including Nick Richards, the big man. Only made 49 field goals all of last season. He's already made 51 this year. Huge Saturdays coming up in December for them. Ohio State in Vegas, Louisville and Lexington. So we'll see. It's one thing to beat Georgia Tech. It's quite another to face the Buckeyes and the Cardinals.
David, let me ask you about another team here. How about Tennessee, who had the nation's longest home court winning streak at 31 games until this beautiful, unbelievably well played game against Memphis on Saturday?
Yeah, it was. I need glasses now after watching that, which was kind of disappointing because of, you know, how good both the teams were. Tennessee had shown us quite a bit. They had not just a good record, but good wins on that record at home against a Memphis team that, while good, was obviously not at full strength and that had struggled a little bit. I still think that this is just a really good Tennessee team. It isn't like that there's a whole lot of shame in losing to Memphis. It's a game I thought they'd win. But I'm still a believer in them. I just think that Memphis is really good and that Tennessee just did not play very well that day.
I didn't get to see the game because I was on the road, Puppet. But let me ask you, which was better? Was it this game or was it the Cincinnati-Pitt game in the Jimmy V Classic?
This one. The Cincinnati-Pitt game rivaled the Cincinnati-Ohio State games the last 2 years.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of bad games there. But, Stalica, as you look at these standings here, Arkansas 9-1, real or fake?
Well, they're going to be a little bit of a home court hero, and even Tulsa came into the game with a bit of a bloated record here. I would have felt better about the Razorbacks had they won at Western Kentucky, for example, but I still think Eric Musselman has them on the right track.
Okay. One other score I just want to quickly note is Vanderbilt suffered a home loss to Liberty over the weekend. Vanderbilt was awful last year. They're a little bit better this year. This is a real good Liberty team, though. One of now four remaining undefeated teams left in the nation. But let's take a quick look at the week ahead here. And we've got this got the interesting week actually for Kentucky with Utah and the game against Ohio State. Both games in Las Vegas, I believe, if I'm correct. So a little Vegas December trip here. David, what else are we looking at this week?
The lights are out. The lights are out. Hold on.
What else
are we looking at?
Do you like any of the other games, or should we just move on? How about Florida-Utah State on Saturday?
That's a good one, and that's a game that both teams need to win. A game there between two teams that have looked good at times but still have not played as consistently up to their ceiling as we thought. This Alabama-Belmont game, kind of interesting.
How so?
How so? Because I get the sense that while neither team is certainly inside the bubble or playing like a bubble caliber team, that both are continually getting better as the season goes along. Okay. We praised Penn State earlier. Alabama almost beat them over the weekend. So I'm kind of a believer that Alabama's going to hit their stride.
I'm also looking next Sunday, Mississippi State, New Mexico State. That's a pretty good New Mexico State team if they can get themselves healthy. Keep an eye on that one too.
Yeah, they can't get themselves healthy.
Well, then on that note, let's head over to the American Conference. We talked a little bit about Memphis. And Tytel, you want to talk a little bit more about Memphis?
How could we not? They are doing very well without their big man, James Wiseman, who will be back on January 12th. 9-1 after a huge 4-point win on the road at Tennessee on Saturday. They're only lost to the Ducks by 8 in Portland. They're doing this not only without Wiseman. Lester Quinones, another great freshman, is out with a broken right hand. So kudos to Penny for getting the job done. 3 cupcakes to finish this month, and they host Georgia in a very interesting January non-conference game with the SEC. Then they start conference play with what could be the conference game of the year in the American at Wichita State on the 9th, and then Wiseman comes back, or he's eligible to come back in their next game after that on the 12th.
It's funny you mentioned that game, Tytels, because Georgia is going to be one of the 4 SEC teams that's not going to be playing in the SEC Big 12 Challenge. So they're one of the 4 leftover teams that's going to play someone in the American like Memphis.
That would explain it. And thank you for that. So the defense has been amazing. They're allowing under 40% from 2-point land, under 28% from 3-point land. Both of those are top 30 in the nation. This is not a veteran crew. They're doing this with defense of freshmen. The youngest team in the entire nation. 11 field goals all season by starters who are not freshmen. 11. All he's got is these young kids, and they're doing it with defense without Quinones and Wiseman. I think Penny is a strong contender for Coach of the Year.
I'd agree.
Recruiter of the Year, that's for sure.
Yeah, and David, he mentioned the game. It's Wichita State. Wichita State, a nice win over Oklahoma today. I think it's time to start paying a little bit of attention here at 9-1.
For sure. And again, how quickly we forgot. Like, this is a Wichita State team that under Greg Marshall had been consistently very, very good. NCAA tournament good, winning games in the NCAA tournament good. And because they went through sort of a rebuilding year last year, everybody kind of forgotten that this is a very strong and established program. Should we even – I guess the question is why did it take us this long to realize that they were as good as they were? They finished strong last year. This shouldn't really be a surprise.
I guess this is how they finished overall last year that kind of had people – had me still waiting to find out. And we will find out a ton about this Wichita State team on Saturday as they host VCU in another huge game this weekend.
Yeah, VCU getting a win tonight against – well, not a very good win.
Oh, they got a win today.
Cincinnati
is hosting Tennessee on Wednesday, and I don't really know that there's anybody else I'm paying attention to in this conference. Besides
Chad, we have to. We don't have video of it, but you need to go and Google what happened at the end of the Cincinnati Colgate game.
You want to describe it for people, David?
I don't know.
So Salika's got his toothpaste there. Right
I am
now.
Not a good enough wordsmith to do it. The only thing I can consider is that Cumberland thought he was playing against UNC Greensboro and decided to heave it up from half court. The problem was there was about 5 or 6 seconds left on the clock. And of course he missed. And then on the rebound, Colgate gets the rebound and gets fouled.
This was in a tie game now.
In a tie game.
And so they lose by a point. It was disgusting. It was ridiculous. It was so worse, not even as bad as just throwing up the half court shot way too early. Then you foul on the rebound.
Yeah.
Let's head out. let's head out to the best conference on the left side of our country here. And Tytel, of course, I'm talking about the West Coast Conference.
Jeez.
Not the Pac-12. And the team that I think, not should not be number one, but I think this team should not be number two in the nation, and the Gonzaga Bulldogs. And they went, and Tytel, I know you don't want to discuss the fact that they went and they beat your Arizona team last night, but they did. I think the game was not even as close as that four-point final either.
I don't want to discuss it, but
okay. Then I'll let you talk about somebody else if you'd rather.
Basketball aficionado, and they deserve to be talked about because they came into Tucson and were up 15 late. The game was, as you exactly said, much farther apart than the score indicated. Nico Mannion did not show up. I believe 3 of 20 from behind from the field. Somehow had 10 assists, even though he was taking 20 shots. Zeke Nnaji with a huge double-double, but Gonzaga seems as good as ever, top to bottom. People just don't come into Tucson and push us around too much, and they did. Once he gets Petrushev and Tilly, the big men, to work with the transfers like Woolridge and Gilder, and he's got Kispert making threes, and like it's just everything's working. And I'm kind of amazed the Zags are not undefeated because they're that good.
They are that good, but I think Tytel, I actually stole your thunder. You wanted to talk about another team, not Gonzaga, in this conference as well.
Yeah, I want to give St. Mary's a little love. 10-2. Speaking of beating Pac-12 teams on the road, they went into Cal, which admittedly is not as good as Arizona, but they won by double digit points on the road on Saturday. Only two losses, by 2 points to Winthrop and by 10 to Dayton and Phoenix. I'll defer to Stalik on this weird scheduling thing because they head back to Phoenix on Wednesday to face ASU, playing 2 of 3 games, not 2 consecutive games, 2 of 3 on the same court outside your home state. Seems like it's never happened to me. It seems very odd. They're doing it with 3-point shooting. 44% is number one in the nation. Veteran team starts 2 seniors and 2 juniors, and a great point guard in Jordan Ford. In his previous 5 games before the Cal game, only 7 free throw attempts exploded. He had 11 against Cal. If he can keep getting the free throw line, this team can keep winning.
Well, let me ask about another team here. Stalika, BYU, who had a couple of rough losses already, had a nice week with a home win over Nevada and a neutral court win over Utah State in Salt Lake City.
Well, the win against Utah State is going to hold a little bit more weight because Nevada, that would have been a better win in years past, but the Wolfpack are still going to be reloading. But by the same token, we're also talking about a BYU team that has a strength of schedule that's number 4 in the country, and their metrics are all going to be pretty bubblish at this point, whether it's a 41 in the Pomeroy's, 30 BPI, 19 RPI, although that's not going to carry nearly the weight that it once did.
Pull them up, Chad.
Yeah, I like that. I like the metrics of seeing this BYU team, and that's why I'm, you know, David, even though I was kind of almost willing to write them off early when they had some of those losses, they lost to to Boise especially, but, you know, getting a little more, maybe they mention now.
Well, yeah, a week ago on the show, we said that they needed to have a really big week. They had games against UNLV, Nevada, and then Utah State. They did. They won all 3 of them. They had the big week that we said that we needed. We did this. BYU, you are welcome.
They've got 2 of their first 5 conference games are at St. Mary's and at Gonzaga. I think they need one of those wins, those 2 wins to and they got to be sure that they don't make any missteps in what's a lot better West Coast Conference. You know, we look at these, look at all the wins we had this past week in this
right game. The other thing, Chad, if we go back to their profile, they do have the win at Houston. I don't know how much credit they're ultimately going to get for that. Sometimes some of these teams, particularly like Nevada, UNLV, their schedule's kind of letting them down a little bit, but I mean, it's not awful either.
Well, you know, the committee has said that they look at intent to schedule as much as the actual schedule. So if you're playing the games against teams that are supposed to be good and they end up being lousy, you do get some credit for that still.
I guess so.
The upcoming schedule there in the West Coast Conference. But let's stay out west and jump on over to the Pac-12 Conference, which, you know, we do have 2 teams here at Tytel, both with 1 loss, and neither one of them is a team that we expected to be up there, are they?
If you had told me the Beavers would have 8 wins all season, I might have had some doubts. The fact that they're 8-1 is amazing. obviously the strength of schedule is atrocious, so beat up on bad teams, but you still got to beat those teams. Only lost by 8 points in Portland. Three cupcakes to finish December. They should be 11-1 entering conference play. Obviously, the conference seems pretty stacked with everybody having a winning record, so I certainly don't think that they're going to go like 12-6 in the conference or anything. Top 20 in the nation in three-point shooting, bottom 25 in the nation with opponent free throw shooting, so even if those come a little bit to the average, they should be okay. Veteran team, all five starters are juniors and seniors. They spread the floor with four guys who shoot 35% from behind the arc, and then the big man, I hope we can get his photo up when you're ready, of Kyler Kelly. He's a local kid, 30 blocks in his past five games, which is why I found the picture of him blocking the hell out of this shot well above the rim. It's a nice strategy for success. You got a big man in the middle who blocks shots. You put a bunch of guys around him who makes threes. That's how you're 8-1.
Yeah, and some of us liked this Oregon State team.
Okay, and nobody on this podcast, but I guess somebody did. But
I recall one of us saying that they thought they might be a dark horse.
It was an interesting week, though, David, for Colorado. Home loss to Northern Iowa, bounced back with the rivalry win at Colorado State, though.
Yeah, and again, Colorado, a pretty good team. They already have that win against Arizona State on a neutral court, but that's really probably still their best win. So while they came out big and they've held serve for the most part, I think that it is fair. Like, they didn't beat Northern Iowa, and they didn't – who's this is a really good Northern Iowa team, by the way. I mean, it wouldn't shock me at all if you see them end up in the rankings before the end of the year. But it what I mean, their profile still needs some work. Now, they're going to get plenty of opportunities. But, you know, I'm still a big believer in this Colorado team. But beating Colorado State, the Rams just aren't very good.
Well, we already mentioned Oregon when we were doing the Big Ten section of the show. But Sleeka, look at the week ahead here. Is there anything else that you're circling that we have not already discussed coming up this week in the Pac-12?
Well, there's going to be a little bit of intrigue as far as Arizona State and St. Mary's, because we already mentioned the Gaels are going to have a little bit of a sense of urgency because they already have a home loss to Winthrop and a neutral court loss against Dayton. But by the same token, the Sun Devils, they're going to be looking for another signature win before they go into conference play. And then the aforementioned Dayton Flyers are actually going to be playing Colorado out in Chicago. So
that's
definitely
big.
It is going to be a big one for the Buffs as well as for the Flyers that we'll be getting into shortly.
Yeah, that's another big one to circle on Saturday. And I'm surprised with no mention of the nationally ranked Washington team that didn't bother playing at all last week and has got Ball State and Seattle this week.
I did want to take a couple weeks off for them.
Go ahead, David.
A quick shout out to another game. San Francisco, a bloated record, probably – you know, swinging over their weight against the Stanford team that's played really well this year, but just an interesting Bay Area matchup. You kind of like to see that. And then the other game here, I mean, this is sort of an under the radar game, but FAMU going to Wazoo. Can FAMU finally get one of those MEAC wins?
MEAC wins. FAMU is looking for their first win on the entire season. One of three teams without a win in the entire country. So let's move over to one of our favorite leagues this year. The Mountain West Conference, and this portion of the show dealing with Mountain West, of course, is potentially sponsored by the Con Expo Con AGG 2020 in Las Vegas, Nevada, from March 10th through 14th.
Yes, yes.
Being played exactly where and when the Mountain West Conference tournament should have been played this year.
Yes, how kind of them to maybe sponsor the league. Look at that. That is just good stuff right there. Lots of exciting. What kind of company are they? It looks like they make tractors or something.
Yeah, David, how about the Mountain West though itself this week? And let's talk about the undefeated team at the top there, actually starting off San Diego State.
Yeah.
I don't think they actually played this week, but still they're sitting there one of the few undefeated teams left in the entire nation.
Yeah, and they're pretty good. I mean, we saw them in their first couple games, and I think we were all really impressed by them lifting the weight so far. So, yeah, I still like them better than Utah State. I know Utah State started off as the higher-ranked team, but San Diego State getting into the polls, you know, at 25 and 24. Oh, yeah, there it is right there. Yeah. But, you know, they're good. They are for real.
Well, Utah State, Titel did suffer the loss, so they were on the verge of the polls. They're not going to break in this week, I don't think, with the BYU loss, though.
They won't. 10-2. It was in Salt Lake. It was by 4 points, but it's a loss. If only the Cougars' big man Yoeli Childs had been suspended a couple more weeks, instead he comes back and gets 20-10. Very weird part of their schedule as well. They're in the middle of a 5 games in 5 different cities stretch. They go Salt Lake, Houston, Sunrise, Florida, Logan, Utah, and Vegas. I wonder what kind of travel budget this team has because they're in a different city every day. top 25 in the nation from the free throw line, about 78% a game. They finally have a 7-footer, Nemias Queta, back from offseason knee surgery. And apparently he worked on his free throw shooting and it worked. 61% from the line last year. Limited action, limited sample size. This year, 81%. If your 7-footer can make free throws, you're going to be okay.
Well, an interesting weekend again. Saturday, another big game day here in this conference, Delico, with Utah State taking on Florida and San Diego State taking on Utah.
Yep, and then we're also going to be, I think you had mentioned, Nevada and St. Mary's going to be right. Another game to watch. Colorado State and Tulsa. Wyoming and Denver. Hey, at least it's a front range. But I think we have to focus on Tuesday where we have the Johnson and Wales of the front range taking on Air Force.
Oh, yes. The honorary team.
And San Diego Christian at San Diego City. Yeah, big, big week in the Mountain West Conference. We got one league we haven't discussed yet. It's the Atlantic 10. Yeah. But let's just jump right on over there. And this week we saw Duquesne win a game on the court of a, what was it, on a Division III court and win a game in a high school court. But they are 9-0 and one of 4 remaining undefeated teams in the nation. Duquesne Dukes.
Most likely, I mean, we've pulled them up before, but most likely will enter conference play undefeated. Now, again, it's as reflective of their schedule as it is of them. I still really like this Dayton program. I think that as a program, they're taking a big step forward. I know that they've played unbelievably weak teams, but not that long ago, before Keith Danbrot arrived, they themselves were an unbelievably weak team. So at least now they're winning those games. But, I mean, they actually look good. I mean, you know, they blew they blew Columbia off the floor. They're blowing through these games the way you would expect an NIT or an NCAA tournament caliber team to go through these types of bye games. So it'll be interesting to see what they do in conference. A lot of good teams in the A-10. I think that after kind of being – you know, after kind of regressing for the last 2 or 3 years, Duquesne with the bloated record, George Mason just with 1 loss, Richmond with some big wins, Dayton way in the rankings and deservedly so. St. Louis not winning against Auburn, but kind of holding their own a little bit better.
They played real well against Auburn yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, and then Rhodey, who we thought was going to just be completely rebuilding, looking not sucky, but actually kind of decent at times. Nobody in this league really – even Fordham is 5-5. Nobody really except Joe's.
Yeah, but if you want to talk about broken records, Temple shattered a Big 5 record when they just completely destroyed St. Joe's because I think their biggest margin against the Hawks in Big 5 play had been 30 points. They beat them by 47, and they were up 51.
We're only facing 13 teams in this league, Sleeka, not 14. But yeah, St. Joe's is going to be a bad season for the Hawk on Hawk Hill there. But Tytel, beyond that undefeated Duquesne team, we do have 3-1 loss teams, including Richmond.
Yeah, you'd think that GMU and Dayton, who are both deserving of praise, but I'm going to go with Richmond and keep it in the D.C. Maryland, Virginia area. This is a team, they started off the year with 2 overtime wins. And their players are playing 45 minutes a game. They're allowing an average of 95 a game. And they only had a 7-point win over Charleston on Saturday. But 9-1 is 9-1. They're only lost to a little team called Auburn, who's undefeated, and it was a neutral site in Brooklyn. Very tough game.
They played really well in that game. I mean, I think we all watched it. They played well. Sorry to interrupt, just furthering your point.
No, that is a good point. Much like we mentioned the other game where St. Mary's or I forget who has the Georgia game coming up, but then Richmond has another SEC game at Alabama to finish December. The good news, they only played Dayton once this year, and they play them in Richmond. So I think that will be a big feather in their cap. Great shooting team, over 41% from behind the arc, almost 80% from the free throw line, both top 10 in the nation. They also start 5 juniors, so allow me to pick them right now. Make the NCAA tournament, wait for it. in 2021, hopefully 2020, but definitely in 2021. And of course, the little guy, 5'9 point guard, Jacob Gilliard, when he plays diagonally like that, he's about 4'9, but he is listed as 5'9. Thank you. His last four games, he's been ridiculous. 12 of 25 from behind the arc, averaging 15 points, 8 assists, and almost 5 steals a game. Talk about a pure point guard, arguably the best 5'9 player in the entire country.
Yeah, and we look at these standings here, and we look at the schedule coming up ahead. Just a quick note, VCU did win that game tonight against Missouri State, so another W for VCU as well, who's got the trip to Charleston, the trip to Wichita. So big, big week for Wichita ahead this week, I think, of all these teams in the conference.
Yeah.
But let's, on that note, actually, I want to ask each of you a question here. Well, we can leave Duquesne up on the screen here because they are one of four remaining undefeated teams in the nation. Auburn, Duquesne, San Diego State, all three that we've discussed tonight. Liberty, we have not discussed tonight. Real quickly, which of those four do you think is going to be the last one to fall? Who lasts the longest here? David, do you have a thought on that?
Yes. I'll start with saying that I think it's San Diego State. Mm-hmm. But if Liberty gets – because Liberty is interesting. Their schedule has been – predominantly weak. They went and won at Vanderbilt. Everybody was kind of impressed by that. I don't think Vanderbilt's any good, and I was actually expecting Liberty to have way less trouble than what they did. They really didn't get control of that game until the final few minutes. But if Liberty, and this is a big if, gets past LSU, I think they will run the table because there is nobody in the ASUN or really remaining on their schedule that is anywhere close to them. The gap between them and everybody else is basically the gap that exists between Arizona and Wazoo. Well, it is big.
It is big, but there is that December 29th trip to LSU. I don't think they're going to get past that. So, but Tytel, yeah. Do you have your thoughts on this question between these four teams? Let me go ahead and put Duquesne up here as well, because I think that's an interesting schedule to look at because it's not as tough of a schedule as an Auburn or a San Diego State even is going to face.
I agree with you that it's not Liberty because of the trip to LSU, although if they somehow win in LSU, I think they are going to go undefeated, but that's a separate conversation for a separate time. San Diego State, it's a good pick because I think they can win the next four. You never know about San Diego Christian. They play very tough. But at Utah State, it's going to be very tough. I think I'm picking Duquesne, though, because St. Louis on the second is before Utah State on the fourth, but I think they can win St. Louis because it's at home. Then they host Davidson, which will be tough but doable. I'll go with Duquesne. I don't think it's going to be Auburn just because the SEC stuff, so I'll go with Duquesne.
Well, if you want to talk about Auburn, though, if you look at the start of the Auburn schedule here, you may be looking at January 18th in Florida if they can win that game at Mississippi State, and they get by NC State this week, but which is a home game, though. Sleeko, what are your thoughts?
I'm probably going to go with Auburn here just because you never know which San Diego State team is going to show up. I think Duquesne is eventually going to have a toe stub. Might even be against a UAB this upcoming week. Because the SEC, they're not going to be what they were last year. But by the same token, I think there's also a decent chance that if everything falls right, we may see Auburn go undefeated possibly into February here, the way the schedule's shaping up.
All right. Well, on that note, let me pull this down here, and I want to run through each of you for any other final thoughts. Tytel, why don't we start with you?
So I wanted to focus on the fact that this time of year is one that is important for a couple reasons. For teams who have had eligibility issues, the semester is coming to a close, and a lot of players become eligible around this time of year. I mentioned earlier that James Wiseman is eligible to return next month. Yoeli Childs already returned a couple weeks ago. And he paid immediate dividends. He didn't beat St. Mary's single-handedly, Utah State single-handedly in Salt Lake, but he was a big factor with 20 and 10. Suspensions also end around this time. Nick Weatherspoon, he's still suspended for Mississippi State 10 games. I think it's up soon. John just mentioned that the Auburn game at Mississippi State ordinarily would be a pick Auburn, but I think he could make the difference. And then injuries are huge. Obviously, if guys are out for the year, like an Alexis Yetna at South Florida, then they're done. A lot of guys, John mentioned earlier, Cole Anthony, they also, his teammate Armando Bacot is still injured. We have a couple of top 10 teams who have major injuries. Kentucky, I mentioned Nate Sestina out earlier. He should be back soon. Virginia, the defending champs, missing Braxton Key. He should be back, I think, soon. So this is a lot of flux and change this time of year because guys are coming and going. So just because you've seen something over the past 30 days, don't count on it happening in the same fashion for the next 30 days.
Great, great point there. Salika.
I would say Shondi Brown for Wake Forest had quite the day. I mean, in the game against Xavier as part of the Skip Prosser Classic, he had 26 points and 6 rebounds. But after the game was over, he had to grab a quick dinner and get ready for his final exam, which was actually in an acting class at 8 o'clock. So quite a full day for Brown.
All right, that's interesting. David, you want to finish off the show?
Yes, just to follow up, we haven't really discussed this on the show, but it's something I've been tweeting about, and it kind of bothers me every year, and that's that, you know, yesterday we were back to normal, everything was back to the way it should have been, but in the days before that, there was just this lull of no games, and the reason for that is that we have exam week. I never understood the importance of exams. I mean, I don't see what it does for the game of college basketball. I don't know why we have to have them. I've done research on this, Chad. I've done research, and most college students would rather watch basketball than take exams. So why do we have exams? Why can't we just have more games? It completely throws the
Where's the buzzer? We need the buzzer back. Let's just end the show on that. I can't go any further, but I do want to thank everyone for joining us. We'll be back again later this week with Under the Radar. I think we'll be back next week, back on Monday night again. But on behalf of David Griggs, John Tytel, John Salika, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you again real soon.